Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System Podcast 133. Paul Williams and Barry O'Hanrahan are with me to discuss who they are backing at both the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open on the European Tour and the Corrales Championship on the PGA Tour. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, guys.
Good morning.
This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit Golf Betting System with betting previews containing tips, masses of tournament statistics and our predictor models, all available completely free of charge. Please subscribe to this podcast and drive the popularity of the show. We're available on social media on Twitter. Paul is at Golf Betting. I'm at Bamford Golf. Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. And please look out for the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel, where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. The Corrales Championship video is up there right now. Please take time to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. That is the podcast currency and drives our listener numbers continually upwards. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of next week's show. Can we have some five-star reviews, please? I'll read out a couple here. This one's entitled Melbourne, Australia. I think we know where Jason actually lives. Five stars. Enjoying the podcast whilst in lockdown in Southern Oz. If you are ever in Melbourne, you can do the show in my backyard whilst I cook you a barbecue. That's from Jason Mayricks, and clearly he is in Melbourne, Australia.
It's Melbourne, isn't it? There's no or. Melbourne.
Melbourne.
I'd be so... No, not when you're speaking it. We'll get an Aussie. You know, look it up online, Steve. Moving forward, I'd love a barbecue. Imagine that, like, nice barbecue, some cold beers after a round on one of the local sand belts. Be pretty sweet.
Throw a few shrimps on the barbie.
And you just lost a few listeners there, Paul.
is that a typical British stereotype of Australians?
Yeah.
We always say, Barry, that we're going to fly across to Ireland for one of these Irish Opens. So the likelihood of flying to Australia for a golf tournament, I'd say, is minimal.
for the time being, yeah. Anyway.
Never say never, Steve.
We can still dream.
Another review, great unbiased content, five stars. What I appreciate about this pod over others is Steve is very unbiased in his takes. Many other content providers have their !guys that they always talk up. Steve does a good job of putting up the blinders and using data. Also, one of the few guys that knows what European players to play on the PGA Tour. Much appreciated advice. Thank you very much. That's from Big Daddy Gator 12. And yes, he's in the United States of America. Please keep these reviews coming. It's very, very important from a Apple Podcast perspective that we keep getting very strong review grades. And that just helps our distribution numbers and just helps us to grow the podcast. So thank you very much for those. Shall we talk, yes, gentlemen? I know we don't want to. But should we quickly talk US Open?
Yeah.
There was a lot of very diverse comments around the US Open, and there were a lot of negative comments about the winner. There were a lot of negative comments about the coverage. There was a lot of negative comments about the way that the commentators and summarizers were basically cutting the knees from under the winner, Bryson DeChambeau, about the way that he plays golf. What were your views on it?
Well, there's a lot of grumbling on social media, full stop at the moment, isn't it? Some of it's justified, I think. Some of it is, you know, the situation doesn't help, does it? You know, you clearly, you know, in terms of camera angles and cameramen, there must be limitations as to what can actually get onto a course at the moment. I guess in terms of the commentary, in terms of the will or lack of will for someone like Bryson DeChambeau to win that title kind of came across with some of the commentary, but you couldn't deny the man. He was outstanding, wasn't he? Particularly on the Sunday, staring down the you know, the chance to win his first major championship, and he lapped the field effectively with his round, only player under par, and walked away the deserved winner. You couldn't knock that whatsoever.
We didn't get to hear the American commentary, did we? Well, I didn't. I was listening to the Sky commentary, which tends to be better anyway. But he devoured that golf course. And when everyone else was wilting, especially when he eagled the ninth, it was pretty much game over at that point, wasn't it?
Well, it wasn't completely. I mean, Wolf dropped an eagle right back in on top of him to stay within one. It seemed like a big statement from Bryson at the time. But, you know... Wolf just didn't wilt at that stage. You know, that was a big moment, and he dropped his putt for his eagle as well. And it was the reverse bounce back on 10 from Wolf. That really hurt, you know, just to stay with him the hole before and then just to drop back that little bit very next hole. It's very deflating. I mean, look, there's so much to unpack about the whole thing. You could talk about it for a couple of hours. I think, you know, Bryson was incredibly impressive. And I think a lot of the... It's probably bordering on vitriol that, is fired in his direction is because it's something different and people are kind of scared of different and it's new and maybe we don't, we can't fully process it or understand what he's doing. And it's much easier to just go on the attack than to try... try to get on the same page as him or, even to kind of get an understanding of what he's trying to do and how he's approaching it because it's so different. And it makes us kind of scared. It's just easier to lash out. And especially this year when everyone's just got those extra frustrations in life, it's just this, Twitter can become a cesspool of just nastiness going on. And I, for the most part, I avoided Twitter this weekend. There was just these persistent storylines and rhetoric coming through the TV and Twitter. The Wingfoot members aren't happy every day. I was like, Jesus Christ, are these guys ever happy then? Because their course was playing very well, and it's a different ball game from 2006 when everybody was just annihilated. The course is different. The course is different.
I agree, Barry. After Thursday and this, it's a US Open, we can't have a leader. Well, yeah, but they've left a bit of moisture in the greens because otherwise it's going to get out of control by the end of the week.
Yeah, it's Thursday
that
as well.
Wasn't that just blatantly obvious?
I thought it was like the Thursday reaction was just bananas. It's like it's the opening day of a tournament. You want to give a little bit of a glimpse about what's possible around the course. And you don't want to go too extreme on day one and have complete and utter meltdown. Like, just basically nobody's happy, which is ridiculous. I thought the Thursday was very good. If you played well, you scored well. If you didn't play well, you scored poorly. And I think for the most part, that remained pretty true throughout the 4 days. And for that, they should be commended. It was a bit funny the way it went. Easy day, difficult day, easy day, difficult day. They didn't get that progression, but I mean, you're missing like a small bit of fine tuning, like micro percentages to get that progression all the way through. And you're dealing with nature as well. It's very hard to get these things bang on. I mean, what does everybody want? The lowest round of the day to be an 80 on the Thursday? Is that like, that's not a tournament. It's just, that's just embarrassing players for the sake of embarrassing them. And I don't think that's something to be proud of, Yes, your course is tough. We can all see it's really tough. If we all went out there and tried to play in it in that condition, in that setup, we would be absolutely annihilated. And I think that's a real reflection of the course, not these high elite level professionals.
No, I guess the issue really was the narrative before the event was the rough, and we all saw videos. Yeah, and you see it virtually every event now, don't you? Someone dropping a ball into a patch of rough somewhere and the ball disappears, and it was all, you're going to have to be super, super accurate. But there was enough smoke there to suggest that there was enough of a fire to mean that you're going to have to play a certain type of golf. And we didn't see that on Thursday because we saw Patrick Reed, who I know all three of us had backed. What did he hit? He hit four or five fairways, didn't he? He was, by the end of well, midway through the third round, he was, what, two or three shots clear at one point, wasn't he? And he was hitting virtually nothing. Matt Wolf, in terms of fairways hit, there was nothing there, was there? It was completely anti what you would have anticipated, A, for a US Open, and B, for what the whole narrative was before the start of the event. So as a punter and as a someone who's placed bets on the event on that basis, to see something looks, you know, completely opposite to what you expected, I can see there's a level of frustration. But, you know, you should take nothing away from Bryson. At the end of the day, one player finished under par for a US Open. And if that one player finishes under par and wins the US Open, then is that what the intention, objective of the organisers was? Quite possibly. You know, if level par for a US Open is, you know, potentially going to win a golf tournament, any player who goes under par is entitled to win. And the fact that he won by six and was, you know, massively impressive is by the by, really.
We say a lot of the time that a really good, and you hear it around the place, that a really good golf course will identify the best golfer of the week. And he was able, and he's able to separate himself from the field by showing how much better he was than the rest of them all week. And in that respect, this was an unqualified success. Yeah. Because he was just so far and away the best player of the week. You just can't argue with it. I think it was all good. There was just a lot of narratives that just seemed to bring in all these negative little things that were just sniping at the main storyline of it being a US Open on a very good test of a golf course. Yeah. I think the one thing we missed in our kind of approach to who we were picking bets was that we probably overestimated the importance of finding the fairway. With those fairways running at even just a bit of speed, they weren't up to like super firm fiery, but you know, they were, you know, as in Open Championship levels, but they were running quite fast. So their effective width was even narrower than they actually were sitting physically. Mm-hmm. And so we maybe fell into the trap of thinking that you needed a few more fairways this week, you know, over 50% or 55. And
he was 41.1, but that was 26th in the field. So what, just about halfway of the guys that made the cut.
So we just went down the wrong path on that. And that kind of led our bets to maybe a slightly incorrect angle. I know I had, everybody will identify with this. I had a couple of notes in my phone from a while back. I think it was, might have been from the Rocket Mortgage, Bryson and Wolf going at each other in that duel. And I put them both down as US Open, you know, notes. And so I was like, that's grand. I was looking at them last week and I looked at what they were doing in between the PGA and the start of last week. And neither of them had been setting the world on fire. So I was like, maybe they've gone off the boil a little bit. So I wrote them off like a absolute moron. And that kind of stuck with me all weekend. I didn't think about it much until midway through Saturday evening when I had Reed, Matsuyama and Kokrak all comfortably in the top 10, well in the mix, going along nicely. And then the back nine happened and all hell broke loose in my bets. And any kind of hopes I had of anything just vanished. And that's when this Bryson and Wolf note came back in my head. I went, oh, shit. So,
yeah, I mean, you look at the raw stats with Bryson. Second strokes gained off the tee, first for strokes gained approach, third for strokes gained around the green, first for strokes gained tee to green. That tends to get it done, doesn't it?
Yeah. It does. Whether you'd have actually foreseen that coming from the Tour Championship and the BMW. Yeah. The one thing I will say, season-long stats, here you go. And we said this, strokes gained putting would be absolutely valuable. Matthew Wolf, let's look at the runner-up. He was sixth for driving distance all drives. He was fifth for distance to apex, so the fifth highest ball flight on the tour. He was 20th for total driving. So you could see his tee game and his approach game, high ball flight, yeah, you could see that. But he had no short game whatsoever on those season statistics. You then look at DeChambeau. Very, very similar stats. First for driving distance, all drive. Well, that won't surprise you. Cameron Champ will be number two. And Distance to apex, second. So second highest ball flight on tour. The difference with DeChambeau, 10th across the season, strokes gained putting.
Yeah.
And then if you, we also kept saying about the mix of around the green and strokes gained putting. Well, of the other players that were in contention, Harris English had that mix. He was top 30 for around the green, 18th for strokes gained putting. You also had Xander. He was in the top spots. Alex Noren was there or thereabouts for a period, wasn't he? 7th for around the green, top 30 for strokes gained putting. So Patrick Reed, 21st around the green, 12th strokes gained putting. So people that were kind of around the mix, Webb Simpson as well. They had that mix, but they just didn't have that, that, you know, just that brute power that Wolf and DeChambeau eventually, that's what kind of separated them from the rest eventually. And DeChambeau clearly could make the putts.
Yeah.
The other thing with DeChambeau, looking at it, and I can agree with what Barry's saying, you look at his wins, where they've been. Well, three of his previous wins had all been on bent grass, Poana mixed greens. Mm. You know, Muirfield Village, that's in Connecticut. That's the northeast. Ohio. Get it right. Ohio. He also won on that Tillinghast track at the Barclays, or the Northern Trust, which that was in New York, New Jersey area. So, you know, he had previous on, and Boston, of course, he won it. He had previous in the northeast of the Americas. The trouble is that trend and that narrative that's been built with players total driving and playing beautiful ball striking golf on the way in, that just didn't transpire to DeChambeau on the way in.
No.
I think this might be a lesson for us going forward when it comes to driving on golf courses, because, you know, if somebody can gain maybe one or two more fairways around over another golfer, the benefit of those extra two fairways just isn't as much as that distance that's being hit. They just can't, just converting that benefit of the extra two or maybe three fairways, it just doesn't show that much in the in strokes gained or in the score at the end of the day. And I think this could be an eye opener for us in terms of going forward. And, you know, pretty much every course, bar the real tight, quirky ones, like let's say a Hilton Head, it's just driving distance, you know. Fairways be damned at this stage, it seems, because you're going to have very few weeks where the rough will be as gnarly as that was, and they still were able to extricate themselves from it.
Yeah.
The one thing, you know, Bryson and Wolf, they missed fairways, but for the most part, they missed fairways on the correct side of the hole, so they were able to, like, get that run-up shot onto the green.
Yeah, it's just about your strategy, isn't it? You know,
yeah, it was good strategy. Yeah.
Now, Barry, I know we've only got you for a few minutes today because you need to shoot off. So before we go into the two events this week, have you got any burning... Any thoughts, any bets you've placed on this week's two events, and then we can let you go and Steve and I'll
my wallet is certainly sore. My bookies accounts are certainly smoking after last week went a bit wrong. So I'm keeping it quite light this week. Seamus Power is back in action on the PGA Tour, and his length should be a really good advantage this week. And he also has a series of good results here in the past. So I'm going to go with Seamus. I mean, it feels like a bit of a KFT PGA Tour blended event this week, you know, in terms of field strength. It just feels a little bit like that. And I kind of find these weeks difficult to really dial into getting more than one or two bets, and they're kind of almost for fun because I find them just a little bit less predictable. Not that I can predict any golf tour, but there's something about them just makes it difficult. So I'm gonna go with Seamus Power and probably leave it at that unless something pops in my head between now and then. Again, Galgurum Castle, and it's kind of, it feels again a blended Challenge Tour European Tour strength field. I've been pretty useless on the European Tour so far the last few weeks. So I'm going to kind of stick stick a little bit along the lines of what you're doing, Paul. You know, the temperature's dropped off a little bit here the last few days in Ireland, and they're, you know, another 100 and something kilometre, well, possibly 150 kilometres north of us up in Galgurum. So it'll be a little bit cooler still. So I'm kind of just thinking about the Scandinavian angle. Somebody's used to playing in these cool conditions. It's always very tough to do well in your own national open. So, but I will definitely, you know, it's tough to see an Irish guy going up there. Who knows what Shane Lowry might do? He's kind of showing some really good rounds and then just having these little bad stretches of golf, which is kind of what he did when he won the Open Championship last year. So it wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if he went and won this week. So I'm going to go. I have backed Lagergren. I think other than that, I might add one or two more. But if not, I'll just enjoy the sweat on the Irish guys that are playing.
Double your two boys up. And
I've doubled them up, Lagergren and Power,
Yeah, jackpots.
Absolutely, yeah. Redemption week.
Be nice. Be very nice.
Very good.
Thank you, Barry.
Yeah, cheers, guys.
Thanks for your time, Barry. Best of luck. And we'll catch up with you next week, I suppose.
Yeah. And best of luck to all the listeners on their bets this week.
Cheers, Barry.
See ya. Do you want to move forward, Paul, with the Irish Open? Because it's the biggest tournament this week, undoubtedly, out of that and Corrales.
Let's kick off with that. Barry's kind of led us down that path quite nicely, hasn't he? So, we're back to the UK for another four-week stretch. Starting this week at the Irish Open, which has moved to the north of Ireland, Galgorm Castle. Clearly, Barry's pronunciation is going to be better than mine, so apologies for that. So we've got the Irish this week, Scottish Open next week at the Renaissance Club, which is where Bernd Wiesberger won last year, I believe. Decent field next week, actually. Got the likes of Fleetwood Rose, Matt Fitz is coming over, Shane Lowry staying over, Danny Willett, Matt Wallace, so a few bigger names or more, a larger range of big names next week at Renaissance.
I remember that last year. Was it like 37 under or something? One that.
We'll see what the conditions are going to be like next week before we.
Yeah, coastal golf. You never know, do you?
No. It could be nasty. It could be cold. Mm. Could be windy, and it could be an entirely different track. We shall see.
Yep.
So the Scottish, and then we've got a BMW PGA at Wentworth, and then the fourth of four is a Scottish Championship at Fairmont St Andrews, which is just down the coast from the normal St Andrews track that we're more used to seeing at the Open Championship, and of course the Dunhill Links. But for now, it's just low-key, watered-down Irish Open, in truth. Originally, we were going to go to Mount Juliet in Kilkenny, which was the original plan, but COVID put paid to that, and clearly they've moved to Galgorm Castle in Ballymena in Northern Ireland, which has the setup which the European Tour needs with the big hotel, etc., to maintain the bubble. So that's the thinking with this. It's lost its Rolex status, which goes some way to explaining the field this week. The prize fund is down to 1.25 million euros, so a big drop from the Rolex Series days, which were 7 million. So I guess you combine that with the fact that we're immediately after the US Open, and it's no surprise really that we've ended up with a field which is pretty poor, which is a real shame for the Irish Open, but that's where we are. Shane Lowry leads the way, 8-1 favourite this week. George Kutsia, 11-1. George is playing for the sixth consecutive week, I make it. So it'll be interesting to see if he eventually runs out of steam, but he's clearly playing some cracking stuff at the moment, George. Ryan Fox, 22-1. Jason Scrivener, 25s. Connor Syme, Wilco at 9-1 at 28-1. Last week's winner, Gout Higo, at 30-1, and then into the likes of Joost Luiten, Lauri Kanter, Lucas Herbert, Will Besling at 33s, 40-1, bar those players that I've just read through just now. Galgorm Castle is a short Parkin-style track, and about 30 minutes or so by car from Belfast in that neck of the woods. So 7,087 yards for its par of 70. Just a couple of par fives on this track. Two short par fours over the course of the first four holes on the front nine. So you kick off with a couple of short par fours and then your par fives are in the back in terms of scoring. But in general, short Parkland style, just over 7,000 yards, par 70, as I say. The greens are good, overseeded bent grass, very smooth, and the comments that I've read from previous events that have been held here have all talked about how good the greens are. So I'd expect some birdies to be made when players are on the surfaces. And of course, it depends on the conditions and how players play up to that point as to how many of these putting surfaces they do actually find. And we've got a bit of course history, actually. Going back from the Challenge Tour between 2013 and 2020, the Northern Ireland Open was played here, and another one-off event in 2019. Just to give you an idea of the winning scores and players who won on the Challenge Tour, Dan Huizing, he won in 2013 at 13 under. Joachim Lagergren, Barry mentioned, won the year after. Again, the same score, 13 under. Clemens Sorde in 2015 at 17 under. Ryan Fox in 2016 at 19 under. Robin C.O. Segrist won at 6 under in 2017. That was in a hybrid format. It's one of these stroke play and then match play style events. Callum Hill won the year after that at 19 under. Jack Senior 11 under. And Tyler Koivisto won just last month at 13 under on this track. So they've played it very recently. If you go through the website, there are two sets of combined stats this week for this event. One with the Irish Open history and another with the Challenge Tour history appended to it. So you can take a view either way as to whether it's Irish Open form that you're looking for or, of course, course form for this particular track, albeit with Challenge Tour players. So take your pick or take a blended view of the two different stats if you like. Totally up to you. Of course, with it being on the Challenge Tour, there are no stats to study. There's no skill stats to look through. So we are a bit in the dark in that respect. If you look at previous Irish Opens, they tended to show a variety of styles. And that was often based on the course or the conditions. So the Irish Open has flitted between some Parkland tracks, some Linksy style tracks. And more recently, it's been Linksy style in terms of the run-up to what would have been the Open Championship in its original original scheduling, but of course that's all changed and we're back to Parkland style this particular week. And typically, if the conditions are easy, then it's been greens in regulation that have been the order of the day. When it's tougher, windier, short games tended to come much more into it. And you often get that with these style tracks, and particularly when they're coastal or Linksy style, which clearly some of the Open or the Irish Opens have been. This week, in terms of conditions, well, it's going to be cold. It's going to be showery. In fact, the temperature's going to struggle to get much above 10 centigrade or 50 Fahrenheit during the course of the week. It's going to be a cold northerly setting in over the next couple of days. So expect to see some jackets and some snoods and some gloves. And I guess that would appeal to a certain type of player, because some of the more southern continental players may be less adept and less experienced at these kind of conditions. It's not going to be pleasant by the looks of it. It does look like it's going to be pretty chilly. 15 mile an hour winds on Friday, so that'll be gusting 20, 25 potentially. The rest of the day is 10 to 15 maybe. So it's not going to be dead calm. It's going to be cold, and there's going to be wind or a bit of rain potentially on Thursday and potentially towards the end of the tournament as well. So I don't think the scoring is going to get particularly out of control. I think the elements will protect it to a certain degree. Looking through the history of the Irish Open in recent years, the last eight winners had all got a top 10 finish in their last seven starts, so they'd all shown a bit of form coming in. But there's a variety of styles that have won the Irish Open. There's a variety of styles if you go through that list of players that have performed or won on this particular track over the last few years as well. And again, that kind of suggests that the best player on the week, regardless of the style of play, is going to be the guy who comes out on top. So I'm not going to get hung up on a particular style, a particular type of player this week. I'm just going to go for players that I think are going to have a good week here at Galgorham Castle. So I've backed four. I've gone down the same route as Barry, actually. I've backed Joachim Lagergren. 50-1 he was yesterday. He's been quite popular. I think it's quite clear why he's been popular, because he's got that course form and he's got some recent form as well, which I'll go through in a second. But I felt the 50-1 was a pretty good price to take on a player who has already won the track. He got his maiden Challenge Tour victory here in 2014. He opened with around a 62 that day and went on for a wire-to-wire victory, so clearly got on with the track well. We've got a bit of Irish Open form as well. He was second going into the Sunday at the 2018 Irish Open that Knox won. And this is a far strong... Well, that was a far stronger renewal than this week, and that's for sure. Not wider form, if you're looking for form in kind of Scotland and the local, relatively local area. He's got three top four finishes at the Dunhill Links as well. I think that's going to be a good barometer of the conditions this week as well, because the Dunhill Links is often played in cooler, breezier conditions as well, as it's scheduled later in the year, October time generally. And some recent form as well. 24th at Valderrama, 3rd at Villamora. His long game and his putting look really good at Villamora as well. So he comes in with some course form, comes in with some current form, he comes in with some local form as well. So adding it all together, 50-1, quite happy to take that on Joachim Lagergren, the Swede, this week. Back that up with three longer price players. Julian Suri. I was surprised with Suri's price, actually. I mean, given the strength of the field, I'm not overly convinced those players at the kind of 20-30-1 bracket have a great deal better chance of winning this golf tournament than Julian Suri, to be honest, and he's available 100-1 right now. And you go back to 2017 when he first really started appearing on the European Tour leaderboards, and he looked like one of those Americans who's come over, used the European Tour as a stepping stone, and was going to quickly jump up to PGA Tour level. I think had he broken into the top 50 in the world, I think he would have done. He got close.
He was very close, wasn't he? It was literally like it was top 52, 55.
Yeah. He was one.
It never
one
quite happened.
He was literally that one decent, one win or another second or third place finish in a big event away from getting into the
top 50. He'd have broken into top 35 or something and he'd have been there.
Yeah, he wasn't.
Yeah,
far
I remember. Was it two years ago?
20, back into 2017. So, yeah, not long ago, coming up for 3 years now. He won in Denmark. He was second at the Hong Kong Open, second in France at the Open de France at the Golf National, second in Morocco as well, and some decent top 10 finishes in some of those final series events. He was eighth at the Earth Course, I think, from memory as well. He looked like the real deal at that point, but didn't quite get it into the top 50. And then he got injured. You may recall he was struggling with a hernia issue for quite some time, and eventually had to succumb to it, had an operation, and lost some time out of the game, which has kind of set him back a little bit. But he's come back after lockdown. He's made three cuts on the trot now in his last three events. Eighth going into the weekend at the Belfry. Fourth after the first round last week. He shot 77 in the worst of the weather on the second day. And there were lots of delays. I don't know if you saw some of the pictures from Portugal last week when it was windy, but seriously.
Naughty, wasn't it?
The conditions were awful for some of the guys that got caught in that. So he shot 77, still made the cut, and then he birdied six of his final 10 holes on Sunday to give him a nice bit of confidence coming into this. So quite happy to take the chance on Julian Suri at 100-1. And as I say, I think he's got as good a chance as a lot of those guys at 20-30-1 or thereabouts. So we shall see. Another guy who I think's better than his price suggests is Callum Shinquin. 80-1 you can get on Shinquin right now. I mean, he missed the cut at Belfry, but that was his sixth straight week. And as we've seen with a few of the guys, if they're trying to stick in the bubble for a prolonged period of time, it can start to get on top of them a little bit. And I don't think it hurts for some of them to miss a cut and to have a week or two off and then get back into it. Because prior to that, he was playing some nice stuff. 11th at the Celtic Classic, 8th at the Wales Open, and some really positive signs with his putter as well, which is something to really look out for with Shinquin. Put him on my list, and I know he was backed quite heavily at the Belfry, and he missed the cut. But as I say, I think that'll probably pay him dividends in the longer term to have had that little bit of a rest. Five top tens last year, but he's not had a better chance than he did at the 2017 Scottish Open, which was the one where he had a one shot lead going down the final hole at par five, and contrived to make a bogey to let Rafa Carrera Bello back into the tournament and into the playoff, and then Rafa absolutely tanked him on the playoff and walked away the winner, which clearly hurt Callum, but I think redemption's got to come eventually. He's too good a player not to overcome that, I think, and this kind of level on a track that should suit him nicely. I'm quite happy to take a chance on him at 80-1. And finally, I've gone back to the well, Steve. I can't resist. I've gone back on Robin C.O. Segrist, which I know I've mentioned the name.
Scientist.
I've mentioned
Scientist.
I think I'll need to.
I did notice his name near the top of the leaderboard in Portugal.
Yeah, no, again, he's an inconsistent sort, isn't he? But you're getting 100-1 on him again. And I'm going to give him one last try. You know, that famous one last go, which probably means I'll back him again in a few weeks' time. But let's see how he gets on. I mean, he should have fond memories of this track. He won here in 2017, as I mentioned a minute ago, at that hybrid stroke play, match play type format. He's still inconsistent. He missed two cuts on the same track following that. So even though he's clearly got some good memories of this particular layout, he's performed well and then not so well. But that's what you kind of get with Robin. I mean, since then, he still misses a lot of cuts, but there's also some good in there. He was second on the Challenge Tour Grand Final, eighth in Mauritius before Christmas. Third at the Vic Open, which has some decent form lines to this. He was leading after 36 holes there. More recently, he was third at the Euram Bank Open, where he led after 54 holes. He's getting closer. 17th at Valderrama, which is good. 32nd last week, and again, he was another who got caught in the worst of the weather. Shot 75 in round two. But then he closed with three straight birdies at the back end of last week on Sunday for a little bit of confidence coming into this. And hopefully he can combine that with the fact that he's playing a track where he's already enjoyed some success over the years. So, yeah, taking Robin again at 100-1. Just to clarify my others, Callum Shinquin at 80-1, Julian Suri at 100-1, and Joachim Lagergren at 50-1 this week are my four against the field. Like Barry's on Joachim Lagergren. Was anyone that you saw, Steve, that caught your eye?
Well, if you two are on him, I might as well jump on. The other one I thought was reasonable price. Did absolutely nothing at Valderrama. Missed the cut again in Portugal. But you had to look at his form in the UK before that. I think it was two top tens.
Mm.
Callum Hill. And we know he's a course winner here.
Yeah. He's one that is always a kind of backable price, isn't he? And,
50s this week.
Yeah.
You could just see him pop him up and it's like, well, yeah, if I looked at his UK form, two top tens and here, if you take out the two missed cuts in Spain and in Portugal, yeah, I didn't think that was too bad.
No.
It's difficult, isn't it? We don't really know what kind of skill sets you're going to need to win around here, because I'm sure Laurie Cantor's going to be popular, isn't he? Because he's been playing some fantastic stuff.
Yes, yeah, there will be a few. We are guessing to a certain degree, and I think the conditions are going to dictate the kind of player that ends up near the top. Mm.
How bad does it look?
Well,
you said it was going to be quite bad, and then it's kind of eased off, isn't it, the forecast?
I think, reading between the lines, and so this is some very amateur meteorology, by the way, so don't quote me on all this, but it looks like there's a hurricane coming into America, which has completely blown the jet stream out. So when I looked at this at the back end last week, I remember saying to you, Steve, and to Barry, that we were looking at 40-mile-an-hour winds coming in for this.
Yeah.
And by the end of the weekend, it changed. It was placid but cold, and it looks like this hurricane's coming. It's upset the jet stream, and we're just going to end up with this kind of northern Arctic blast that's going to come through the whole of the UK over this coming weekend. So it is going to be cold, and combine that with a proper northerly wind coming through as well, it's going to feel even colder as well for the players. But overnight, the wind forecast that I put in my preview has changed again, and it looks like Friday is going to be the windiest day. So it's clearly a moving feast.
Yeah.
And I suspect it's just going to be cold and breezy, with some breezier and some wet interludes as well. So those guys who have got some decent form in the north of Europe, and it's not on the coast, this is a parkland track, but I suspect that coastal and Irish and Scottish weather conditions that have been played successfully in the past for some of these players should bear through. And I think that really points to someone like Lagergren. I think he's got a good chance. Yeah. We shall see.
Doesn't point towards someone like a Jazz Jane Wattenound, does it?
Or, no.
I mean, his name jumps out of a very classy type player at 60-1, but that forecast doesn't feel very Asian esque, does it? Or well, no. Or American esque.
And the South Africans as well, it might feel a bit alien to those guys as well.
Sounds like he might want a grinder.
Yeah, yeah. Well, although I'm not sure it's going to be that. You know, I don't think it's going to end up in a kind of a single figure. I still think you're probably going to get to 12, 15 under somewhere in that bracket. Maybe, you know, 13 under has been quite a popular score there on the Change Tour, and I think you may be looking at something like that. So somewhere in the middle would be my view of how difficult it's going to play. But yeah, that should be an interesting one. It'd be good to see it on TV because clearly we got no live Portugal. Videos last week, so we'll see what happens this instead.
PGA Tour Corrales Championship, and this kind of puts everything into context, what I'm about to read. This week we move from New York to the Dominican Republic. This is the third ever Corrales Championship on the PGA Tour, with Bryce Garnett and Graham McDowell taking the first two renewals. The PGA Tour has signed a four-year contract with Grupo Punta Cana, the owner of Punta Cana Resort and Club, which will see this tournament on the schedule through the 2021 season. Oh. And that throws up the very strange situation where the Corrales will be played both this week and in March 2021. So twice in a single PGA Tour season. Mm. I've never seen that in my life.
No, it's odd, isn't it?
But these are the COVID times we live in. They've tried to strengthen this because it's always been clearly they played it on the Corn Ferry for 2 years. They then brought it into the main PGA Tour as an alternate event, which I think used to be played alongside the WGC match play.
Yeah, that makes sense. It was earlier in the year, wasn't it?
Yeah, because I think they play Puerto Rico alongside Mexico, and they play this alongside the match play a couple of weeks before the Masters in a normal golfing calendar. That used to play as a $3 million prize fund, which doesn't really get many PGA Tour pros out of bed. It used to come with a two-year exemption, which is fantastic if you win it. And it also came with only 300 FedEx Cup points and no Masters invite. This time around, though, because the PGA Tour is desperately trying to find tournaments to fill the schedule and, of course, to try and give their PGA Tour members some tournaments after 3 months of no activity, they've upped the FedEx Cup points to 500. It comes with a full Masters invite for next year. I know that's confusing as well. Not for this year in November, but the year after.
Yeah.
2021, that would be. And it also comes with a $4 million prize fund. So you think, it was interesting, because over the weekend, whilst all my US Open players, apart from Xander, disappeared down the leaderboard, even though I thought Patrick Reed was going to bring home the bacon.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, I wonder what kind of field strength this is going to bring in. Because, you know, it's a full status event now. There's some FedEx Cup points. There's a Masters invite. I didn't have any concept of what it would bring in. And when I saw the field, I was like, my chin hit the desk. And when the first prices came out yesterday, they were very sluggish after the US Open. Unibet came out first. And I'd already written up two of my players, and I saw that they were 20-1 each. I was in serious trouble, because I'm thinking, they priced up Pat Perez, who clearly I've tipped up, at 25-1, and that was the first market to show. I'm thinking, how the hell can Pat Perez be 25-1 in this? Unibet have actually that the Unibet and the 888 numbers. You do get this in these small fields. They've got a completely different view of this market as opposed to a lot of the other bookmakers. Lots of discrepancies.
Yeah.
So we've got Will Zalatoris. We've got this Corn Ferry stud who's clearly a talent. I mean, to finish in the top, was it six in the US Open?
Yeah. That was very, very impressive, wasn't it? Well, you saw it from his stats, and I remember looking when we were pulling together the stats for last week's US Open, and he did stick out with some of the performances that he's got, and you know, his raw Korn Ferry statistics. But
oh, it's just
to go and translate that to the US Open is
it's top 10 each week, isn't it?
Yeah,
for like months. he's something prestigious, and to do that around Wing Foot, I mean, that shows you where we're at. Now, you can look at this two ways, and that's the trouble with these kind of alternate kind of events. We've had Richie Rawinski win at 33-1 at Reno. Oh, I know it as Reno, but the Barracuda. Victor Hovland was 12-1 favourite at Puerto Rico this year. And, you know, 12-1, don't fancy it. Oh, I'm not going to go anywhere near that. We had Bermuda last year. Brendan Todd won 100-1. Barracuda year at the fall before then. 12-1 favourite, Colin Morikawa. So we have seen Morikawa and Hovland in the last four kind of renewals of this level of tournament win at 12-1 and favourite. So do not be surprised to see Will Zalatoris. I was umming and ahhing whether to just bang him up at 14-1, 3 points win only and
be done with it, yeah.
Be done with it. And he could win. Clearly, he's the class of the field. And then you've got Corey Connors, 18-1. He's like, whoa. Mackenzie Hughes at 20s. At least Mackenzie Hughes made the Tour Championship and he was second here last year. You can kind of see that. He's as short as 12-1 with some firms and he's 20-1 with Unibet. It's kind of all over the place.
Yeah, as you say, there's some real discrepancies between the thought processes with some of these odds compilers, which is good because generally when you find that, then further down the list there's going to be some equally different views and a little bit of value potentially.
Sam Burns 20-1, and we were on Sam Burns, weren't we, a fortnight ago? Yeah. 50-1 at the Safeway Open. He was the 36 hole leader, and then I read an interview with him basically saying that whatever God was gonna, you know, bring down from higher would be his end result. And I didn't like reading stuff like that in terms of, you know, you get players that are confident and can say, oh, you know, I really fancy it this week. And he was kind of, oh, it's complete fate what happens this week.
Yeah,
I thought that was a little bit strange. And I can remember last year I tipped up Joel Damon for this. And we know what Joel's like. He's all in it for the money. If he doesn't ever win on the PGA Tour, he's not that bothered. You know, it's almost like mentally checking yourself out. I think Burns is a talent. Burns is going to win. And he is very Bermuda grass positive. You know, he's from Louisiana. Mm. He's the sort, but these are Paspalum greens. Let's talk. I mean, those are the top five in the market, and it shows where we're at. We're playing this at the Corrales Golf Club. It's in the Dominican Republic. It looks a nice spot. I mean, I wouldn't mind flying out there and spend a week or two out there. I don't know about the 85-month quarantine when I got back into the UK, but it seems a nice spot out there. 7,668 yards. It's a par 72. So that's a long golf course at sea level. So you think to yourself, well, actually, it's going to favour the Bombers. And then you see the two winners here. In fact, you could see three winners or four. We've had Dominic Boselli and Nate Lashley who have won here on the Korn Ferry Tour. Now, neither of those are Bombers. Nate Lashley is very neat and tidy. He's a high accuracy man, high, you know, decent approach game. And when the putter fires, as we saw in Detroit last year when he won his first PGA Tour event, Lashley can score very low. And that kind of transpires across to Bryce Garnett, who won here in 18, and G-Mac, who won here last year. They're not long bombers as such. Now, it doesn't mean that long bombers can't contend around. It seems to be one of these neutral courses where if your approach play is good enough, bearing in mind we don't get any strokes gain data whatsoever here, so there's no laser technology out there tracking any shots. It's pretty basic. Fairways, greens, putting average kind of stuff. It seems to me, though, that, and you read this in player interviews, it's a second shot kind of golf course, and as ever at these kind of things where the scoring's going to be super low, it boils down to a putting contest. Mm. Who's got a good hot putter? We've had 18 under win both times, Garnett and GMAC. The forecast this week is the calmest I've seen. There is no wind. It's like 5 to 10 mile an hour max, and you know, some days 6, 7.
Yeah.
So I can. This is going to be a 20 under job.
Yeah, there's going to be some birdies made by the looks of it.
The greens, they are not Bermuda. They are Paspalum. Paspalum, that is a grass that is very prevalent in Asia. Because it's very hardy, and bearing in mind, it's, you know, these are typical kind of Gulf of Mexico, Caribbean type temperatures here, 30 degree heat, high humidity. Paspalum's very, and it feeds off sea water, doesn't it, Paspalum?
Yeah.
It's so they can just basically bring the water in from the coast, and that can irrigate the course. It's a resort course because clearly, you know, lots of Canadians, you know, notice a few Canadians at the top of the field. Lots of Canadians fly down from Toronto and Montreal and Vancouver, enjoy some nice winter or fall sun down here in the Dominican Republic. So the Canadians love it here, and that's why I think you've got Mackenzie Hughes playing, you've got Corey Connors, I think Gellerman's playing, Michael Kligich, David Hearn. There's a great Canadian set of players at this tournament. But the Paspalum Greens, if you're looking for some comm courses, they clearly play Paspalum Greens, although it's a slightly different derivative, at Cocoa Beach, where they play the Puerto Rico Open.
Yeah.
You've also got Paspalum Greens at El Chameleon, where every year they play the Mayakoba Golf Classic. And we've also got Paspalum Greens, or we used to have them, and it's an old tournament which has disappeared off the PGA Tour schedule, the CIMB Classic. Now, they changed the last year there, I think was 2018, they changed the greens there in Kuala Lumpur from Paspalum to Bermuda. But previous to that, they were all Paspalum greens there. And as we know with the CIMB Classic, that was an absolute birdie shoot and a half, wasn't it? 28, 30 under.
Yeah.
that place was mad. So if I'm seeing any form at Mayakoba El Chameleon, or I'm seeing form at the CIMB Classic in Kuala Lumpur, I think that's a big tick in the box for this. And you can kind of see that with Garnett and with GMAC, because Graham McDowell won the Mayakoba Golf Classic in 2015. And if you look at Bryce Garnett, he's had a 5th, a 6th and a 7th at that El Chameleon golf course. Regular punters will remember that last year, that was where Brendan Todd won his second of two consecutive tournament victories at El Chameleon, didn't he?
Yeah.
Beat off, I think it was Carlos Ortiz was up there. My tip, Harris English was right up there. What kind of year has Harris English had? Wow. Didn't have any status. He had a 126 to 150 status on the PGA Tour starting last year. And now he's in the world's top 50 and finishing in the top 5 of a major.
I know. I remember us saying...
Incredible. He still hasn't won a golf tournament.
No, I remember us saying at the start of the year, he was playing some great stuff, but couldn't get into some of these invitational events, could he, because of his status.
No, no status.
That's all changed now.
Now ensconced. And don't forget, that US Open, I think, went towards Ryder Cup points.
Yeah.
If he keeps playing... par 3, par 4, par 5 splits here over the past 4 renewals. Baselli, minus 2, minus 9, minus 13. Lashley, minus 8, minus 7. 5, minus 8, minus 7, rather. Garnett, minus 4, minus 4, minus 10. And then we had GMAC last year, minus 2, minus 6, minus 10. The par 5s here, the 16 views on par 5s. If you can get someone that can really score heavily on those par 5s, I think you're going to be doing well this week. Mm. And the golf course is a set of two nines.
Yeah.
We've got an inward nine, which is far more stringent and plays along the coast with far longer holes. Two par fives, both over 600 yards. And, you know, some of these shorter hitters like a GMAC, like a Bryce Garnett are going in there with like 3 wood off the deck. But you've got a kind of outward nine, which is more mangrovey, more inland, more tree-lined, And this is why this course, it's very, very similar to this El Chameleon gig in Cancun at Playa del Carmen over in Mexico, because that's exactly the same. Inland mangrove kind of first nine and a coastal, more coastal, classical kind of view of the sea, cliffs, whatever, on the inlet, on the other nine. It's a very similar setup, and clearly the Paspalum greens. Predictor model for this week. As you know, Paul does the same, but I'm very into the predictor model and what that can produce. I didn't, in my actual predictions this week, driving distance wasn't a feature whatsoever. You can tell that from kind of where I'm at with the names here. 10, Chris Strood, 125-1 with William Hill, 8 places each way. 9 is Vaughan Taylor, 125-1 with William Hill, 8 places each way. Now, both of those names have both done well at the Mayakoba Golf Classic.
Yeah.
We then get 8, Bryce Garnett, 66-1 with Unibet, 6 places each way. 7, Chucky Three Sticks. Chucky Three Sticks at 28-1, Paul. William Hill, 8 places each way. That just shows you where we're at. But again, Hal is all over Mayakoba.
Yeah, he is. And he finished 34 thereabouts last week at the US
Open. Yeah, he won fairly recently at the Sea Island Golf Classic. And he's been putting really well the last two outings. But 28-1. And he isn't the accurate sort off the tee, is he? He's quite a powerful hitter, Charles Howe. But I could see Howe really popping up this week. 6, Wes Roach, 125-1 with Betfred, 6 places each way. Top 5, Mackenzie Hughes, 20-1 with Unibet, 6 each way. 4, Graham McDowell, the defending champion, 80-1 with Unibet, 6 places each way. He's not playing at all well, Graham, at the moment.
No, lots of miscuts.
But there you go, another OHL Mayakoba winner. 3, Patton Kizzire. Wow, another Mayakoba winner. 125-1 with William Hill, 8 places each way. It's almost as if I've kind of ramped up the Paspalum scores. 2 is Brian Stewart. He was in the last group out at the Safeway Open, finishing the top 3. 50-1 with Bet365. I was tempted on Stewart. I would have put him up, I think. I would see Stewart definitely coming in the each way money this week because he does like banging two top 5, 2 top 6s together on courses he likes at this time of year and basically guaranteeing his PGA Tour privileges. I think Stewart will be bang up for it this week. And number 1, Pat Perez. I don't think I've said that very often. Pat Perez, number 1 in the predictor model. 35-1 right now. William Hill, 8 places each way.
Well, when you're talking about a track where you're going to have to make copious amount of birdies, that's his MO, isn't it?
That's his game, isn't it?
Yeah, particularly if it's easy. If the conditions are easy and your birdies are easy to come by, then he can just... He's a very streaky player, isn't he? He can get into those birdie-making runs quite readily.
Now, I watch a lot of content from the United States, Rick Rungard, of course, Pat Mayo. And those guys over there, a lot of the data guys, the model poppers, they hate players that are putting well. They love ball strikers that aren't putting well. That seems to be the MO, yeah? Now, I'm just looking here. If you look at Todd, if you look at Hovland, if you look at Wierenski, all 3 of those winners on these kind of alternate events were both 17th, 15th and 6th, coming in on their previous outing with putting average with the putter. Wierenski, when he won in the Barracuda a few months ago, was 2nd for strokes gained putting on his previous outing. I don't think a hot putter is such a bad thing, you know, at these kind of events.
I agree.
As long as you can find people that are hitting a level of greens, because this is clearly going to be a golf course where high GIR is more than possible, because even to most of the field, because it's a resort level golf course, and I'm seeing top 25 for greens in regulation last year were all over 70% greens in reg, so it gives putters a real chance this week. Putters a real chance to actually do their thing on the dance floor. And when I looked at the actual previous two winners here in Garnett and in Graham McDowell, their tee to green game arriving here wasn't brilliant. They had shot some low TOTA scores in previous outings. But one thing I did notice with both of them, on their previous outing to winning this, they were both in the top 12 for strokes gained putting on their previous outing. So, you know, that's another little trend that I think is quite a good trend to follow. Someone that's clearly going to like the greens, going to like the humidity, going to like the fact that it's a tournament where you shoot birdies, and they've got a little bit of confidence with that putter rolling in. Garnett was 11th for strokes gained putting on his previous outing at, I think it was the Valspar tournament. He was a 66-1 chance, and he had finished 31st at Copperhead on his previous outing. He was 12th for strokes gained putting, 11th rather. Graham McDowell, he'd also played Valspar, finished 46th. Nothing hugely alarming there. But again, top seven strokes gained putting the outing before arriving here and winning. So I'm kind of taking that model. That's exactly where I'm at, really. Who knows? And again, like Barry said, I'm in a situation this week where these tournaments, if you can wipe your face, get out of here with a level week, score an each way return, I'm more than happy. Because it's, I don't know, Will Zalatoris could win by six, can he? And everyone's happy. They've lumped on at 10-1 and we move on. Here are the four that I've gone for. I'll go in reverse order for a change. One player that you can't say is a great putter, but one player who's been playing some absolutely dog-awful golf recently but seems to be turning a corner is JJ Spawn. Now, I can remember 2 years ago with JJ Spawn. In fact, I've actually got his world ranking up on the screen. As close as the end of 2017, he was fringy, top 100 in the world Spawn. He was one of these guys that kept kind of getting into contention and not getting over the line. He's had 2 years of absolute abysmal golf, done nothing. But just recently, we're starting to see green shoots with Spawn. And that's what interests me. 160-1 I managed to get on yesterday. That price is gone with Bet365. Yeah. I'm seeing, what is he now, 125? Can you look for me price he is right now?
He's certainly starting to get
He's shortened
backed
from there.
Yeah, let's have a look.
He's... in my 8-week trackers that you can all view on my preview at Golf Betting System, there are links in the description box. He's first for greens irregulation in this field over the last 8 weeks. He's fifth for strokes gained on approach, and he's first for strokes gained tee to green. Wow. He's striping it.
125-1 now is the best you'll get, and generally 100-1. So, it's clearly proved to be a popular pick so far this week.
He's striping it. Ninth at the Safeway Open last time was his top 10 for years. But you listen to this. Ninth at Torrey Pines in 2017. Sixth at Harbortown in 2018. That's another golf course that both Garnett and McDowell have done well at. Clearly GMAC's a winner at Harbortown. Garnett's finished in the top 11 around there. We've got Spawn with the sixth. 14th at El Chameleon in 2017. Second at Sea Island in 2017. And third again at El Chameleon in 2018. So there's a 14th at the Mayakoba and a third at the Mayakoba. He's finished, when he's played on those Paspalum greens in Mexico, first for putting average in 2016, 13th for putting average in 2018. And Spawn is the kind of sort where his tee to green game is fantastic right now, but the putter hasn't been brilliant. If he can actually get on some Paspalum greens and feel confident on them and actually has a great paying week, this guy's going to go really low this week.
Yeah.
Really, really low. There's been some real, you know, there was a 4-under-66 at the Rocket Mortgage Classic on one round, a 5-under-67 at the Barracuda, a Saturday 6-under-66 and a Sunday -4, 68 last time out the Safeway Open. So 10 under over his final two rounds in California, arriving here. He's got momentum. I can see Spawn having a great week. I really can, if that putter clicks, yeah? So 160-1, I was more than happy to take just the five places each way at a quarter odds with Bet365. Some shorter prices. People have kept mentioning Christopher Ventura for quite a while, especially with DraftKings and especially with his stats. And I can see why, because his stats are very, very strong. Now, Ventura, he's one of the 2019 Corn Ferry Tour crop. He was Scotty Scheffler, Robbie Shelton, Xingjun Zhang, and Christopher Ventura. They all won twice in that 2019 Corn Ferry Tour. So he's clearly a very good player, and he's clearly a player that can win when push comes to shove. But when he came to the PGA Tour last season, he was the one of the four that actually struggled. You think Shelton made the playoffs. Xingjun Zhang made the playoffs. Scotty Scheffler, well, he's on a completely different level now. We were talking about Harris English. Scotty Scheffler's just... still hasn't won, mind, but he's now, what, top 30 in the world?
Yeah.
You know, potentially Ryder Cup player. So that's the kind of quality that Scheffler's got. But Ventura, again, two-time winner on the Corn Ferry that year. But he absolutely struggled like sin when he made the step up. You know, we're talking about six straight missed cuts. He missed seven missed cuts in eight. And then he arrived in Puerto Rico, finished 20th on Paspalum Greens, and then COVID hit. But since COVID, 4th, 8th and 15th on his three Corn Ferry appearances. He's also had a 21st, a 19th and a 37th on the main tour up to the Wyndham Championship. And in those tournaments, come Sunday morning, he was 19th, 22nd and 18th. So he's getting experience in later Sunday groups on the main PGA Tour. Fantastic. And then the Oklahoma State University graduate was in 12th spot after 36 holes at the Safeway Open 2 weeks ago. But he pushed forward. 6 under 66 on Saturday meant that he played in the second from last group with Cameron Percy. Now, we all know about Cameron Percy, us punters, don't we, Paul? Cameron doesn't tend to hang around on a Sunday, does he, Cameron Percy?
There's a few like that.
Yeah, and Cameron Percy's extreme, mate. If you see a top 10 from Percy, it's always that he shot a 62 on Sunday to jump up from 58. Yeah. He shot on Sunday 5 over through his first 6 holes at the Safeway Open. Cameron Percy-esque. But Christopher Ventura, who you think, oh my, you know, he could have shot all sorts when he's seen Percy doing that kind of thing. He went a bogey-free 70, so 2 under par, bogey-free, and finished 7th, his first ever PGA Tour top 10. Mm. But the beauty of this guy, he's one of these rarities right now where he's driving the ball beautifully, 6th for strokes gained off the tee in my 8-week trackers, 4th for tee to green, he's in the top 20 for putting, and also 1st for strokes gained total across the last 8 weeks. And if you look at traditional statistics, he's 11th for greens in reg over the same 8-week period in this field and 6th for putting average, putts per GIR. So the guy can putt. Lived in Mexico. He's got Mexican mum. Lived in Mexico till he was 12. Then he moved to Norway. Then he did all of his education at Oklahoma State. I mean, we've seen some good players there. Matthew Wolf recently. And he lives in Florida, so he must get to play these kind of Bermuda-y, Paspalum golf courses fairly regular. I think yeah. Ventura at 40-1 is a decent punt this week. William Hill 8 plays each way at 50 odds. Do I need to say too much about Pat Perez?
Well, we've touched on him to a degree already, but yeah, I can see the logic with him because simply you're going to need someone who can get into that birdie-making mindset. And
I'm going oldest first here, Paul. Oh, it is. I'm going oldest first. These are his last 6 appearances on Paspalum Greens. 33rd, 1st, 1st, 34th, 6th, 8th.
Obviously likes it.
I could take you through all of his, what I would classify as fall, you know, like autumn finishes on the PGA Tour, but it's just a catalogue. 2 wins. He just loves popping. I said this about Brian Stewart. Some of these players, especially the older guys, they know that this is their opportunity to make hay, mate. Mm. Fill the wallet, fill the coffers, get loads of FedEx Cup points on board, and then you don't have to worry about the rest of the season. And Pat Perez is in that kind of vein.
Yeah. It's a bit more with it, this event as well, isn't there? As you said right at the top of the show, there's more money, there's more FedEx Cup points than in previous years. So added little extra carrot for some of these boys to pull their finger out.
I don't think, Pat, if this had been an alternate event, $3 million, no Masters appearance, I don't think Pat would have turned up.
No.
He'd have waited to Bermuda next week, but he's thinking, I fancy a bit of these Paspalum greens and it's a Masters invites up for grabs and... $1 million prize fund. I'm, to the winner. I'm liking that, and he's just playing well, isn't he? He was 7.286 strokes gained putting at the Safeway, which was 2nd in the field. So going on the basis that we want someone with a nice warm putter, Pat has got that. And actually, his tee to green gain is fine. It might, you know, I'm seeing some reasonable numbers. He's 13th in this field for greens in regulation over the last 8 weeks. So he's hitting greens. 20th for putting average, 15th over that time period for strokes gained putting, and 16th for strokes gained total over the last 8 weeks. I think Pat Perez is a fantastic bet. He's not the longest. He's nice and neat and tidy. And he mentioned at the Safeway Open when he contended the whole week that the thing that's made the difference, he's moved his ball back two balls back in his putting stance. And that was why that putting performance came from nowhere. He'd been working with his short coach. And all of a sudden, he's just making putts. Big style. So Pat Perez, again, I got 40-1. I don't think that's available anymore. I got 40-1 yesterday, 8 places each way, 50 odds with William Hill, 1.5 points. And then one guy that he jumped out at me after Friday, you know, at the US Open. I thought, oh, he's playing quite well. And then, of course, I thought he's the sort, you know, that would go really well if he is in the field next week at the Corrales.
Yeah.
And you know what's going to happen then. So you've put him on your shortlist. You know, he's going to make your tips, and he goes and shoots a 69 at the US Open in round three, and gets himself onto the fringes of the top 10 at the US Open.
Yeah, right on the radar.
Yeah, right on the radar. To his credit, he held on, didn't he? Top 15 or 13th he was last week at Wingfoot.
Yeah, it's a good effort.
I love Adam Long. I don't think he's going to pop too many models because he isn't, you know, his statistics can be a bit all over the place. But if you actually just look at Adam Long, you look at his Paspalum form. 8th here in 2017. He was 10th at the Abaco, which they play on the Corn Ferry in the Bahamas on Paspalum greens. He was also in 2018 sixth in Mexico. So he clearly likes this kind of territory. And here at the El Chameleon Mayakoba Golf Classic last year, he was right in the mix. He only finished one shot out of a playoff with Brendan Todd and with Vaughan Taylor at that Mayakoba Golf Classic. He's short, he's accurate off the tee, he's hitting plenty of greens at the moment, and he's putting nicely. Adam Long. He's the guy who, a few years ago, no one had ever heard of him. He'd done nothing on tour, and all of a sudden, he won the Desert Classic, as it was called then, at PGA West at something like 30 under par, beating Phil Mickelson in a head-to-head on Sunday.
Was that when, I forget now, was he like 600 to 1 to win it or something?
Obscene. He was some crazy, obscene price. I can get there, mate. I've got it at my fingertips. He was a 600 to 1 chance that week. He won. No, I'm not. I'm looking at my spreadsheet. He was 26 under par winning that. So you just think to yourself, well, in a world where we've got Sam Burns at 18 to 1, and, you know, if God sends a win to him, he's going to take it. And you got Will Zalatoris at 12 to 1. I thought that I would have liked 30s or 33s. Adam Long, who's been playing. He was third at the 3M Open fairly recently. He then played the PGA Tour playoff events and didn't disgrace himself, made it to the BMW Championship, and he's just finished in the top 13 at a US Open. I just get the kind of feel. He might be a kind of... Remember Ches Reavie last year when he finished third at the US Open and then won the Travelers?
Oh, it's possible, yeah.
I could see Long holding that form, hitting enough greens, keeping the putts rolling... And at a course where you're going to need to shoot 20, 22 under par, that is his wheelhouse. Mm. That is Adam Long's wheelhouse. So that's where I'm at. Long, I'm at Perez, this Christopher Ventura chap, and JJ Spawn. Now, I know, before I even ask you, because you've been telling me, you've been sending me messages about exactly who you're tipping up this one. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to this.
It's funny when you were reading through your rationale for this, and in particular,
Hot putters.
Well, hot putters is kind of a given for me, but getting quite kind of forensic with it and looking at the strokes gained putting in specifically for the last event or the last couple of events. Mm. So while you were talking, I flipped through the strokes game putting performance of this player that I've picked.
And he's 90-1 with seven places.
Absolutely. Bo Hosler.
His Jeff last... Feinberg's going to love this. Bo Hosler.
He was looking at the Northern Trust. His last two starts, 49th at the Northern Trust, 23rd at the Safeway. He started poorly in both of those events, 73 to open them both. 65, 69, 67 at the Safeway to finish 23rd. Pair of 66s at the Northern Trust and eventually finished 49th. But going back to your point, 13th for strokes gained putting at the Northern Trust, 3rd for strokes gained putting at the Safeway. And we know he's a cracking putter. I mean, for me, if there's someone who fits this particular type of track, when it's going to play well, when it's going to play easy, when it's going to play scoreable, then someone like Bo Hosler can really make hay, in my view. So he's putting well. He's a good putter in general. And he's got 5 runner-up finishes now to his name. And he's got to get that win. He's good enough for a win for me. In fact, had it not been for Ian Poulter at Houston, who made that putt on the last to get into a playoff with him, 20, 25 feet, whatever the number was, he'd already be a PGA Tour winner. And whilst those kind of things can hurt, I know, I understand that, you can overcome them, and I think he's starting to round into a bit of form again. And quite happy to take him at 90-1, as you say. With
that's
seven
a nice
spots.
Prize. I don't know why. I've got no idea why. And I have cracked onto this many in the years past. There is some link between the golf course of Houston and the Mayakoba Golf Classic.
Yeah.
And we've seen Harris English has got a great record in Houston. Yeah. And he won the Mayakoba in 2013, I think it was, or 2014. Bryce Garnett. I remember tipping up Bryce Garnett at some silly number, like 250-1 in Houston, and he obliged with a full each-way payout, finishing 7th. Yeah. So that link between Houston and what you just said, it losing to Ian Poulter in Houston, and this golf, and the Mayakoba golf course, that's a reality in the past. I've got no idea why. It nice has worked in the past.
Nice
and then you see that close link. Yeah, you see that close link between El Chameleon and here. And he is. He's putting lights out at the moment, Hosler. He won't be popping many models in DraftKings, I can assure you. But I think he's a decent shout for a DraftKings play as well.
Well, yeah, if you can sneak him into... And he'll score a lot of points because he will make a lot of birdies and potentially eagles. He'll make probably too many bogeys, which will, if he doesn't win, that will probably be what costs him. But in terms of scoring on DK, I can see that point as well.
Top 25 strokes gained putting. I won't go through all 25, but if you take the last 8 weeks, Peter Malnati at 1, well, there's a surprise. 2, Vincent Whaley. Don't know anything about him. 3, Bo Hosler. He's tied with Mackenzie Hughes. Now, we know how good a putter Hughes is. So Hosler is putting so, so well. The other one people have mentioned to me on Twitter, Facebook, and already on YouTube, and I did have a good close look to him, but I can't tip up everyone and don't really want to in a field like this, is Rob Oppenheim.
Right.
I don't know if he came on your radar.
No, not overly, but maybe a DK play later.
I think he got in the final group at the Wyndham and he was fighting to get into the playoffs, and in the end it all became a bit too much for him. He does seem to be one of those guys, Oppenheim. I think he's a bit more mature. When he gets really into the heat of battle, he does seem to just fall away slightly. That doesn't mean he can't finish in the top 5 here in this field, but 100-1 on Oppenheim, who's been playing some outstanding golf recently. That has to be said.
Yeah. I've got another one, 100-1 as well, and that's James Harn, who was leading into Sunday at the Safeway. Finished 9th overall. I mean, that's not really his MO, is it? He normally wins off the back of about 15 consecutive missed cuts. So him to go 9th win doesn't really work, but 100-1. On a player who's clearly playing well, I quite like that. 22 birdies at the Safeway, 4 for driving accuracy, 6 for greens and regulations. So his long game's good, and we know he can putt. Kuala Lumpur 6th and 9th as well, if you go back through his history, which I quite like, again, for this tie-in between those two tracks and the putting surfaces there.
Before we finish, what would you say, because I know that our American listeners especially would like this kind of view, what would you say about the European Tour guys that are playing this week? Stenson, we've got Matthias Schwab, and we've got Thomas Dietrich. If people are thinking about backing them in the States or using them in DK, Is there anything about those three that you would like this week on this kind of setup?
Well, Dietrich's been playing some really good stuff, hasn't he? Outside of those three names, the two that have come closest to, which kind of tie in with that, Peter Uihlein, who's played a lot of golf on the European tour over the years. I know he's been
great putter.
He's been more Korn Ferry. Yeah, there's a bit to like about what he's been doing, actually. Again, he's won by the coast over in Europe at the Madeira Islands Open, I think it was back in the day. He's tempting, 125 to 1. The one who's got absolutely no form but loves Paspalum greens is Kiradek Afibamra. He's been in some shocking form recently. But he's the kind of player, if we were coming to a European Tour event now and it was on Paspalum and he was in this kind of form, I would be quite tempted to stick him up as a pretty random long shot and just see how he goes with it, actually. There are a couple that I've picked. If we go back to your names, I'd probably go Dietrich out of the others. But the problem with Dietrich, as we've seen on the European Tour, is that he gets himself into some really strong positions and then just hasn't quite got that killer instinct, I don't think, to get over the line at the moment. That'll change. That'll change when he gets his win. And when he gets his win, he's probably going to go on and be a very, very good global player, I think. But just not quite there yet.
You can see why him they're playing because of this Masters invite.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a big carrot.
Why wouldn't you?
Big carrot. I mean, another one who came close as well. I've got a list of about 10 here, which I could potentially back.
That's the trouble, isn't it?
Yeah. Anibal Lahiri, who's again another one who likes Paspalum greens and showed a bit of form last time out. Shot 65 in his second round, so there's some flashing some form there.
Did I see he's down to 560 something in the world golf rankings?
It's better than that, isn't it?
Wow.
It's better than that. And of course, Matt Every's playing, so I'll stick him up for first round leader. Scott Brown is another one who likes Paspalum greens, got no form, but he's another one who often pops up in the first round as well. So a couple of quid on Every and Scott Brown for first round leader, I think, is another angle to play this week.
It's a hodgepodge. It's total garbage, but we're in. I've gone low on my stakes this week. I just, anything could happen, really. But let's see what happens. It's a bit samey across both events this week in the Ireland and the Corrales.
Yeah,
it is very much after the Lord Mayor's show this week, isn't it?
Yeah. Better next week, definitely better in Scotland. And you say you've got the Bermuda Championship next week as well. There should be some better fields both sides, hopefully.
Well, I wish you luck with your bets.
Yeah,
and
you too.
I wish followers and listeners good luck with the two events as well. Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. Of course, we will be back next week, hopefully with Barry again, to discuss both the European Tour and it's Scottish Open and the Bermuda Championship on the PGA Tour. Thank you. We'll see you again soon. Goodbye.